and shows even more clearly how fractious the British government currently is. Over 100 Parliament members opposed to Brexit voted to keep May in charge for now. There is growing expectation that the Prime Minister will ask the European Union for an extension of the March 29th deadline for Britain to formalize what its future economic relations with Europe will be. An ISIS suicide bombing in northern Syria today killed 15 people, including at least one American soldier. The bombing happened near the Turkish border in the city of Manbij at a restaurant frequented by U.S. troops on patrol. Trump ally Senator Lindsey Graham suggested the president's announced withdrawal of troops in Syria encourages Islamic State fighters to make attacks like the one today. U.S. forces maintain a number of bases near Manbij and patrol the area frequently. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 16th, 2019. Here are the main points again. Joanne Hardesty called out hecklers. Nancy Pelosi disinvites Trump. And in international news, a suicide bombing in Syria. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Jacob Soderberg. The producer is Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is also Rachel Hartley. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is additionally Rachel Hartley. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge. At 9, it's Press Watch. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's Between the Covers. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you would like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. That's it for tonight.
Good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo, weekly news segment brought to you by myself, Michael Crenshaw, and others from in and around the KBOO community. And tonight we have a special guest, Kiana Kelly, who's a student at Alliance at Benson working towards graduation. Welcome, Kiana.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. As you know, I'm a teaching artist in residence. I work at different schools all over the city, combining hip-hop, art, and culture with social studies and social issues. Kiana came to me last week and spoke to me about a book she was excited about reading, and that got the conversation started. So that's what we're going to be discussing tonight. Kiana, tell us about the book and what you think about it.
So the book is called American Prison, A Reporter's Undercover Journey into the Business of Punishment. It's by Shane Bauer, and it touches on topics of the corruptness of our prison system and how it was founded based to replace slavery. Hmm. And honestly, for me, it was really eye-opening because we hear all the inmates' accounts of the story, but we know those can be biased and maybe a little bit exaggerated. But to hear the other side of it from a guard, I feel like that's really important. So we know that it's actually true. It's not just made up, if there were any doubts about that.
You know, it's funny. So one of your teachers, Joel, and I were talking this morning at Alliance, and we wanted to make sure you got some social studies credit for this. And when I was talking to Joel, I was telling him about the book. So for some of you who heard Kiana intro the book, she said it's written by Shane Bauer. And you might recognize Shane Bauer's name because Shane Bauer is a journalist who was actually imprisoned for being for some issues around the border of Pakistan. And he came back to the United States and was hired by The Nation as a journalist to go undercover. So this book, in this book, he's actually a CO, a corrections officer. He's gone undercover and gotten a job at a prison. And he writes from that perspective what he learned as somebody actually working in the prison. And when I was talking to Joel, I said, it's funny because, you know, some of these things we as black folks and poor people and people who have experienced oppression, we know this. There's no doubt in our minds that the prison system is corrupt and unjust and oppressive. But sometimes it takes a white journalist to give something legitimacy that our voices don't give to the general public.
Yeah, it does. It's crazy, actually, because it took two white prisoners, their deaths and the family suing. That's what stopped or was supposed to stop the the prisoners from being forced into labor and working on the plantations.
Wow. So this book goes into forced labor. And let's back up a little bit. You had talked about one of the things that blew your mind when you were reading the book is the connection between slavery, capitalism, and mass incarceration. And so we're going to come back to that, those three things and how they intersect. But let's go back before that and just talk about the way racism has impacted our lives. So can you talk a little bit about who you are as an 18-year-old black woman and the way that racism has impacted your life?
So I'm mixed race, which is hard because I'm not black, but I'm not white. I'm in between, which also means I get a lot of hate or just negativity from both sides of the spectrum. And it's like a race in and of itself. Mm. In my experiences, I've experienced mostly from police officers, actually, and just people in the streets. They like make derogatory remarks, and then are like people when I'm walking, they'll walk across the street in the night. And in my opinion, I look pretty innocent, but because of the color of my skin, I look like a criminal or a threat. And
I want to apologize for misidentifying you, you know, because I do believe in self-determination. So thank you for clarifying that. And I think the way that people view us affects the way that we view ourselves eventually, even if we don't agree with people's point of view about who we are, we have to deal with it. And so it affects our behavior. It affects our awareness and how we carry ourselves in society for the sake of survival. What do you think about the historical development of racism and how people might look at you when you find somebody assuming things about you that aren't necessarily true and that are actually dangerous and harmful for you? What do you think about where those ideas and thoughts came from?
Well, I just think back to how those were the same thoughts and ideas used to keep the black people enslaved and to keep fear in the minds of everybody else who was involved. Because if they were in fear of them or if they thought they were lesser, they could justify the enslavement and the treatment that they were and the like terrible things they were doing to the slaves and just black people in general and any minority, actually.
Wow. So you're saying some powerful things, and thank you, because a lot of people don't actually make the connection between how we're seen, how we're treated, and the reasons actually being to justify exploitation. Exploitation for what? For profit. Some of the things I think about, Kiana, when I look around at society, at civilization, at the world that we live in, and I look at the wealth that some people have access to and other people don't, and I think about the history of how that wealth was created, I think about how integral the role of exploitation of African people has been in that process.
Oh, yeah. We're a country that's founded on the work of people who we don't pay and we don't treat well. And not even just black people. It's important to, like, remember there's also a lot of South Americans and Central Americans and just anyone who's slightly darker than tan.
Mm.
And that's crazy.
Yeah, we're talking now about the intersection of the history of African people, the history of people who are indigenous to this hemisphere, First Nations people from North America to South America, Central America, the Caribbean, and what's happening today. What are some of the ways in which mass incarceration or the prison industrial complex have affected your life personally?
I have currently a couple family members and friends who are either in prison and have been serving their sentence or are about to receive their sentence. Actually, just on Monday, my longtime, really close friend got sent to Coffee Creek for the 5-day introduction they have type thing, and then he'll be going to whatever prison they have in mind, and I won't know until he's there.
That sounds pretty devastating.
Yeah, but I feel lucky that he only got 75 months versus the 12 years they were originally talking about.
So you've got friends and family that have been incarcerated. You don't have to answer this question, but have you dealt with incarceration in your own experience?
I have. Most of it was when I was young, so I was in the juvenile system. Mm-hmm. I was arrested in California, like by the border, back in 2016, December 2016.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was in there for a month, then transferred back to Oregon because that's where I'm from and I had a warrant here, and I was in the Donald E. Long Juvenile Detention Center for about 2.5-3 months altogether.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not much better the way they treat the kids and the adults. I think it has improved, and it's way different between the way they do things in California and the way they do things here in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see those differences firsthand.
So you know from experience, and what something I struggle with in my community is being very concerned about the future of and for young people and the rise of mass incarceration in our lifetimes and historically. And you know, I feel like to a certain extent, people talk about this a lot, pop culture reinforces the expectation that it's normal for a young person of color to, especially young black and brown people, to expect to experience incarceration in their lifetime. And because of that, a lot of young kids want to know. They're curious, what's it like? Because they almost anticipate that they're going to have to go at some point. What would you say to younger people who haven't had that experience yet based on your experience?
I would say that, first of all, I have always, well, when I was younger, before I ever seen that side of the jail or that side of the bars, I thought about how it would be and what it would be like and if I would be able to do it. And I always imagined myself, for whatever reason, ending up behind bars at some point in my life. I was always a good kid, so I don't know why. I always just had that feeling of dread. But I would tell them that it's not worth it. I know they kind of glorify it, I feel like, nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
In music and rappers talking about how hard they are because they were sentenced, they didn't talk, and they got out and did their time. And so that kind of makes it seem cool because people you look up to were doing it and they did it without problem. At least that's what they say. And so we think that it'll give us some street cred or just make us look better if we do the same thing. And there's nothing like the feeling of being looked at with disgust or being treated like less than a human. And no matter how tough you think you are, it's enough to make the strongest man break down.
Yeah. Yeah. That what you just said is moving and it's important, because as well as what you said about being treated like less than a human, I think that's one of the most demoralizing experiences that any of us can go through. And the fact that a lot of us have been trained to expect to have to deal with that makes me ask the question, who does that serve?
Oh,
who does that serve, Kiana?
Well, it serves the people who are making money off of these prisons and off of people staying at the bottom because they work for cheap and they don't get much in return, so it's easier and more profitable. It's a cycle, so we get stuck in it, and it's a cycle of poverty, then desperate acts in hopes of relieving that poverty, and then getting arrested and then potentially serving jail time or prison time. And when you're released, if you do get released, it's back to the same patterns because there's no actual rehabilitation or job training or drug and alcohol counseling or addiction treatment that goes into it like it's supposed to. Now I think it's a little bit better depending on what part of the country you're in, as far as like the educational programs and the educational and vocational programs they have available, but it's not enough. And it doesn't touch on many of the reasons people are actually locked up, which are like mental health issues or just poverty and homelessness. People do petty crimes because they'd rather be under a roof and fed, even if it's not much, than to be outside and suffer of being homelessness.
That's real. And I think I'm always drawing the connections because of how I was raised, and give thanks to the elders who pointed out the connections and who led me to information that exposed me to the underlying root causes of some of these systems that operate in our lives that are destructive, how they affect us and why they're in operation. These systems are in operation for reasons, and there's often two narratives. There's a narrative that holds a system accountable, and then there's a narrative about personal responsibility. And I think in our society, a lot of people who are informed by the media tend to look at personal responsibility as the deciding factor in somebody having control over whether they wind up in prison or not. But we also have to be able to look at the fact that there are systems at work in our lives that target poor people specifically, that increase the likelihood, the way that the police deal with us in our communities and on the street, that increase the likelihood of us having to do time. And but to look at this other, to almost play the devil's advocate, to look at this question of personal responsibility, because you know these things, Kiana, what are some of the things that you take into consideration that affect the choices that you make now? And how do you see living your life in a way where you have more control over what happens and the type of circumstances you might experience?
Well, I feel like every action I do, or not every, but a majority of the things I do that are in the public eye, I try to make sure that I represent who I am and who the people who are like me are, like from my race and my gender and my area. I try to make the bars get set a little bit higher and show that not everybody is like they say we are. We're not all animals. We're not all criminals. We are not all thugs or gang members or whatever predetermined label they have assigned to us. And I just think I'm lucky to have had a mother who makes sure I know how important education is. And that has been something that I've wanted for myself, and I think that helps, because if you have a goal to focus on and you have dreams and hopes, then you're more likely to stay on that path that'll lead you to those things rather than wander off because you just don't have anywhere else to like go or you're bored or you don't have anything better to do. And I feel like that's a big part of the issue.
So having a sense of purpose can actually be a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and like we were saying earlier, how people, if they tell you you're going to be a certain way, you're more likely to end up that way. It's like you can't, things get spoken into existence. Have you heard that phrase?
Yeah, for sure. I believe
and
that.
It's definitely true. Maybe not 100% of the time, but pretty close. If you keep telling someone they're an animal or a criminal or this or that, they're going to eventually start acting in those ways that you tell them that they are. Mm. And I was lucky enough to have people who believed in me since I was young. So that made me understand that I can do better than what is intended for me by like society's terms.
Ooh.
And we don't have enough of that going on because, like I said, most people tell you you're going to end up in prison, you're going to end up at a 9-to-5 minimum wage job, or you're just going to stay in the cycle and be a victim of circumstance.
So you're a college student currently, and as you're finishing high school, you're going to PCC. What are you studying?
I'm just doing English in a college successfulness class.
And okay. And where do you see yourself in, should we say 5 years or 10 years? What would you rather visualize?
10 years.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years, Kiana?
That's a hard question. Hopefully have either gone through and done or graduated from college as like a civil rights lawyer.
Okay.
I just want to help the people and I want to do something to make a change for the better. And I want to shine a light on the things that so many people overlook or refuse to see, especially within the foster care system and the prison system and just kids and young adults. And I want to do something to give back.
And I want to say thank you because you're doing it right now and you're doing it through the life that you lead. Thank you, everybody, for listening to News from the Boo. Again, this is Kiana Kelly, student at Alliance at Benson, and also a student at Portland Community College. And I'm Mike Crenshaw, and it's been good talking to you guys. We'll talk to you again soon. Peace.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series, every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, January 21st, Clinton Street Resistance will screen King, a filmed record, from Montgomery to Memphis, a historic documentary nominated for a Best Documentary Oscar in 1971. The screen benefits the Children's Book Bank. Again, that's King, a film record, showing Monday, January 21st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One-Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. The time is 5:54, and up next is Sojourner Truth.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Attorney and law professor Marjorie Cohn joins us to share her views on William Barr, Trump's nominee for U.S. Attorney General. This as senators questioned Barr in his confirmation hearing yesterday. And on the ongoing teachers' strike in Los Angeles, our guest is LAUSD teacher Deborah Raphael. Also, our Campaigners for Black Lives series will focus on inequities within schools and classrooms. Amir Whitaker, staff attorney for ACLU, joins us. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. The Senate Judiciary Committee hears from witnesses today on day two of its confirmation hearing for Attorney General nominee William Barr. The lineup includes former Attorney General Michael Mukasey, the presidents of the NAACP and Urban League, and of the Fraternal Order of Police. During questioning yesterday, Barr asserted his independence from the White House. He said he believes that Russia had tried to interfere in the 2016 presidential election and that the special counsel investigation into alleged links between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia is not a witch hunt. Barr defended Trump's decision to fire FBI Director James Comey. He stuck by previous positions in which he advocated for mass incarceration as a solution to violent crime. Barr also backed President Trump's plan for a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. California Senator Kamala Harris questioned him on that point.
Do you believe that a wall would address the concern that you have about drug trafficking?
Well, a wall certainly would, but in some places it may not be necessary to have, you know, what most people imagine as a wall.
Are you aware that most of the drugs coming into the United States, in particular through Mexico, are entering through ports of entry?
Yes, but they also come elsewhere, and so do illegal immigrants cross the border. And
basically, in particular on the subject of drug trafficking. Are you aware that most of the drugs that are trafficked into the United States enter through points of entry?
Yes.
The Senate Environment Committee considers the nomination of Acting Environmental Protection Agency Chief Andrew Wheeler to serve as EPA Director. Democrats are sure to grill Wheeler on his past lobbying work for coal companies and other industries regulated by the EPA. Wheeler's roughly six-month tenure as the agency's acting administrator has been far more low-key than that of the man he replaced, Scott Pruitt. Pruitt's fondness for the perks of power and for alleged favors, from round-the-clock bodyguards to lavish travel to special deals on mattresses from the Trump International Hotel, generated constant headlines and helped lead to his resignation last July. Under Wheeler, the EPA has moved forward on major rollbacks and pending rollbacks of Obama-era environmental measures. These include weakening the mileage standards that cars and trucks will have to meet, weakening measures on climate-changing carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants, and removing millions of miles of wetlands and waterways from federal protections. Environmental groups say Wheeler's lobbying work immediately before for industries regulated by the EPA should disqualify him outright. The Sierra Club said, quote, a coal lobbyist is unfit to run the EPA, period. A day after a crushing defeat for her Brexit plan, British Prime Minister Theresa May is fighting off a no-confidence motion in her government. Lawmakers who both support and oppose Brexit rejected May's plan by a vote of more than 2-1, 432 votes to 202. It was the biggest defeat suffered by a government in modern British political history. But May is expected to survive today's no-confidence vote. May said it's not time to change leadership with the looming March deadline for Britain to exit the European Union.
Today, as we look ahead to today's vote, backing the government today will enable us to find a way forward on Brexit and on the issues, as she says, that matter at home and ensure that this country has the government it needs to take it forward, to deliver on the referendum.
Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn said May had shown she's not capable of leading the nation at this critical time.
Nothing demonstrates the sheer incompetence of this government quite like the Brexit negotiations. Yesterday's historic and humiliating defeat was the result of 2 years of chaos and failure. The Prime Minister has lost control, and the government has lost the ability to govern.
With Parliament split, there's a growing chance Britain will seek an extension to the two-year Brexit process due to expire on March 29th. It's not clear the European Union will go along. Kenya's president says security forces killed the al-Shabaab militants who staged a 19-hour assault on a luxury hotel in Nairobi that killed 14 people. President Uhuru Kenyatta also vowed to hunt down all who might have been involved in the attack.
We will seek out every person that was involved in the funding, planning, and execution of this heinous act. We will pursue relentlessly wherever they will be until they are held to account.
Day 26 of the partial federal government shutdown with no signs of a breakthrough. President Trump told supporters in a conference call the shutdown will continue for a long time if it has to. Trump also said people are impressed at